Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Sixers Draft Podcast. I am your host, as always, Daniel Olinger, joined by two friends of mine today to talk about one of my favorite prospects, one of their favorite prospects, probably one of Draft Twitter's favorite prospects in general, just a really beloved guy. We have Anish Nemburi from, he is a scout slash analyst at Pro Insight, and the one, the only, the Kevin Rice contributor at Liberty Ballers. He of Sixers Twitter fame, and I would say probably the biggest defender of Ish Smith ever. Is that right, Kevin?
Yeah, probably. I can't say I'm Sixers Twitter famous, though, when I'm on a verified user's podcast. So.
Yeah, I can't believe they actually verified me. I'm still, like, in shock by it. I thought it was hilarious more than anything else.
Yeah, and a blue check DM'd me to go on a podcast. I had to go on.
Anish, Kevin. Anish, Kevin, how are you doing today?
Not too bad, just chilling. Glad to be on with Mr. Big Time over here with the blue check and Sixers legend TKR. So
yeah,
can't wait.
I'm having a great, what is today? Tuesday. I'm having a great Tuesday so far. I didn't just wake up like an hour ago. Don't worry about it.
Oh, good. but let's get to our topic for today's podcast. Jared Butler out of Baylor, who... I mean, first of all, it's good that we can have this podcast already because for those who didn't know, Jared Butler had a type of heart condition that he had been red flagged for, I think even before the college season. And then in this process, like they're just trying to wonder, like, is the NBA going to fit into play? What they've announced that he should be good to go, which makes him like, it's just very good news in general, just for Jared Butler, the person, all rooting for him. And it's even better when you think that Jared Butler is really good at basketball. And I'm sure most people could probably tell you that, considering if they just watched the national championship or any of March Madness, a lot of the guys on Baylor looked pretty good as they ran to the title. But Jared Butler in particular is a guy I think – see, the thing is I don't know if he's going to be there at 28 for the Sixers. It is, the more it looks like, it feels like he could go early 20s based on how many teams like him. But how about – Anish, we'll throw it to you first. What do you think is just like your favorite thing about Jared Butler as a prospect, like the main selling point for him?
So I'm going to start first with like the personal enjoyment part of it, because I think that's two different things. It's kind of the same, but I think just from a personal viewpoint, I think my favorite part is his handle. He's so shifty. He's able to piece together multiple moves and get guys off balance, and he does it in such a fun way, and it makes it so effortless, and that helps him get open shots and create for himself in terms of off the dribble jumper specifically. And then in terms of actual scouting thing, I would say it's not only that, but also I've really enjoyed his pace, specifically in the pick and roll and improvements as a playmaker this year. He was always a good playmaker, but I'd say he definitely made a significant jump with Baylor over this past season. And you could see him kind of looking off defender. I think, Dan, I think you had you had a couple of tweets about that, right? I don't know if that was you or someone else.
Yeah, I tweeted a video this morning of him doing some passes, and I've just noticed on some of his passes, he's been doing it more where he does like to, especially if he has a guy in the corner and then another guy down low near the basket, like in the dunker spot or cutting him from a weak side, like he knows how to look the other way, and he knows he has the other guy there to pass him. I do also think, just I'm thinking out loud here, like he's a very good passer. I do think he has helped, like compared to other college prospects, that he was playing with a team with a lot of good players. I mean, that was like, it's obvious to say they were a great team. They won the title, but he was placed in a good system of good spacing generally, I thought. And like some real, like other, he had other guards who could do a lot of stuff, and Davion Mitchell, Macy Oteague, Alan Flagler off the bench was really good too. Just I think he had a pretty good context for him to succeed in college, which obviously isn't a knock against him, but it is also something to keep in mind. Whereas you think you look at other prospects and it's like, man, this guy, like I'm trying to project forward what he can do because I don't think this is the best way to use him. Whereas you look at Jared Butler and you're like, man, this is just a really good situation for him. Or I think it's just a great play style. But no, you're definitely right with like the handle and just how shifty he is. he does, I think, like when he comes off of screens, he can get bigs to step up because he, like, the way he gathers himself with his feet and like he points them straight to the rim and he makes it look like he's about to shoot. Like, I think our friend Noah, who runs the NBA Underground on Twitter, that account, he said all the time how Shai Gilgeous-Alexander like throws off defenders because all his moves kind of look the same. I think Jared Butler has a little bit of that where he can make multiple things look the same the moment before he makes his decision. And it's just, you're always going to have the defense guessing if you do that. Kevin, how about you? Just, is it more of the same, like in terms of your favorite selling point of Jared Butler?
Yeah, it's like on a micro level, the handle is amazing, like creating for himself. And then the team aspect of it, I think he, one of my favorite things is he maps the floor so well. And again, Baylor had a very, very fluid offense. Everyone kind of knew where to be, when to lift, when to relocate. But a lot of the pick and roll he ran, he would just fire off passes like on a frozen rope and like right where they needed to be, right on time, set up his teammates really well. So it was kind of like, it's amazing watching him create for himself and then also create for others at like the same level. And it's so much fun to watch. So he, again, because the Baylor had a lot, all their big men are very good rollers and they sealed a lot for Butler to create space for him. But he always found them like the exact moment, the exact direction of the pass, angle of the pass. So it was awesome just to see him kind of map out a offense for the Sixers. I don't know if that can translate super well because they don't have currently don't have a lot of great rolling big men. But I feel like you can make it work with Jared Butler.
You know, Kevin, you know who was a good rolling big man who the Sixers gave up a while back? His name Rashawn Holmes, maybe?
Yeah, I think I know him.
Just like, you know, always really good, rolls hard to the rim. Although, I actually will say I've noted it before, because he might get more playing time this next year. Paul Reed does roll very hard.
Yes, he does.
Paul Reed will roll hard to the rim. But yeah, like you, especially that's such a good point because I think it's someone who, like, obviously me and you are watching every Sixers game. We're very in depth of this. Like, Joel Embiid is amazing. That's probably the one thing I think all Sixers fans agree. He's just not very good at. He's never been much of a roller, whether it's like by choice. Now obviously it's hard to roll when sometimes there's, due to whatever reason you want to think, there's like other defenders already waiting in the paint helping off other Sixers players. But also it's something to do with, like, Joel Embiid is not a like quick load jumper. Like, I think when he gets off the ground, he can jump just fine, and he sometimes has quick reaction times where if a guy's smaller than him, he can block shots, like, just because he has giant arms and he's huge himself, so it doesn't take that much. But it's also why, like, bouncier guys have given him some trouble sometimes because they just get off the ground quicker than he does, which is, again, to be expected of a guy who's as massive as Joel Embiid. But I do think that's an interesting the way you talk about Jared Butler, just, like, he's so good at operating with that, and the Sixers aren't necessarily a team designed for that. And I think, like, the other concern fit-wise that I've heard about Jared Butler of the Sixers, just that he is a 6'3", 6'4", guard, right in that range. So not tiny, but not big. And for a Sixers team that already has a lot of small guards, already took a guard last year in the first round in Tyrese Maxey, who is definitely a small guard who should have the ball in his hands, like, to provide the most utility that he can. And then a guy in Seth Curry who doesn't need the ball in his hands, but obviously, like, you can only have so many quote-unquote small guys out there. And all the great things Seth Curry does bring on offense, like, it does compromise your defense a little bit if you're too small, and Seth can do what he can, but at 6'2", he's kind of limited. But I do think I want to touch on this next. I'll let you dive into this first, Anisha. Jared Butler's off-ball scoring utility, because I think that's where, if you're trying to think where he can start up, because, like, this sounds like a guy who wouldn't fit the Sixers, this is where you think, oh, but this can help.
Yeah, no, I think a big part of why I have him pretty confident in terms of, like, translating into NBA players because of his off-ball utility. Just some quick numbers via synergies: 1.51 points per possession on 49 catch-and-shoot possessions in the half court, 1.33 points per possession on 75 spot ups, and was limited as a cutter, but did well off of that, moved well off the ball, worked well, cut, and it worked really well. Davion Mitchell and Maceo Teague, Adam Flagler, as you mentioned. Baylor had a ton of guards, and all of them had the ball a good amount. And even when Butler didn't have the ball in his hands, he worked well off of them and still was able to create points for either himself or his teammates. So I think Baylor liked to run the, like, a dribble handoff weave kind of thing. And I think, especially since Joel likes to do that with previously JJ Redick, now Seth Curry, I think Butler could be could be that kind of guy where he has that ability to shoot off ball or shoot off the catch and do it in a variety of ways where he's not just where you're worried if he doesn't have the ball in his hands.
Mm-hmm. And like you could also, because I saw Baylor running some double drag actions and just thinking like you could have Jared Butler run those with Embiid as the first screener and rolling, maybe Tobias Harris as your second screener and popping, and like that can get you some pretty good looks. So again, like Jared, and that is another thing, like just we're talking about the on-ball stuff, like Jared Butler is a guy who works really well with a lot of ball screens because, again, like you said, we've all said with the handle, just he knows how to get his man where he needs to be so then he can get an advantage, and he's good at maintaining advantages, very good at putting defenders in jail, which, you know, just getting them stuck behind him. He like sets guys up to run into screens with all those hesitations and little moves he has. Kev, what do you think about his overall fit with the Sixers? We'll just go specifically on offense right now. Like, do you think his off-ball, do you think he blends enough both off-ball and on-ball that it shouldn't be a concern maybe that on like a very surface level, you see a small guard who likes to have the ball in his hands a good bit. Like, but are you just overall confident that he can fit with them?
Generally, I'd say yeah, because like just from a team building standpoint, not thinking about like a team ceiling, like Tyrese Maxey and Jared Butler would be a very good backcourt to have just because Tyrese has the ball in his hands a lot. And then you have a safety valve and Butler who can command an offense on his own. But I don't think that's, in Sixers context, a necessarily like championship backcourt, especially obviously there's trade deadline, everything coming up, draft, everything. So like we don't really know the Sixers future right now, but I think he does have enough off-ball utility that he can run off screens. You mentioned the double drag actions. The Sixers ran a lot of those for Seth Curry this year, or last season. And overall, I just think like if you just do an Embiid Butler pick and roll, like we mentioned, Embiid's not a good roller like Chachua or Flo Thamba on Baylor, but I feel like if Joel pops on that, Butler then has enough space where he can create for himself. And we haven't even mentioned it yet, his spin move.
It's so good.
So precise. It's so powerful. It's so quick that I feel like if he has that kind of downhill space one-on-one with a guy and there's everything spaced out, he can kind of hit someone with that or just drive right through them and over them, which he showed. But like he has everything you'd want a somewhat undersized guard to be, or not super fast guard to have, of just pure strength, sets his defenders up so well, disguises his moves, and just creates and maximizes advantages seemingly every time he has the ball. So I think he'd be a good to great fit on the Sixers.
No, yeah, we definitely have to mention that spin move because, whew, like left to right when he has it going, just, and I think powerful is the perfect way to describe it because, I mean, obviously it's not the same caliber, but you guys remember how he doesn't do it as much now, but like for 3 years, LeBron basically killed everyone just because if he spun back to his right, like his massive shoulder would send someone flying and it's a bucket at the rim. Like Jared Butler doesn't do that, but it's so powerful that he gets guys to bite and he like leverages such great position off them. And he is not doing these spin moves. Like he's picked up the ball and then he spins, or they're a little like, he is like, I am fully in this cross and I am gathering this before this defender has any idea what's happening. Like he's just going to do it all so fast that they kind of like, cause they're probably thinking in their head, like I've got to keep Jared Butler in front of me. Jared Butler's a really good player, a scorer. And then he can just hit them with that so quickly. It really gives them a lot of problems. Anish, anything you want to touch on with Jared Butler offensively?
Yeah, just real quick. I one more thing about the spin move. I think the greatest thing is that he has nothing really crazy in terms of physical tools, but he's able to utilize that spin just as well as someone who has not just as well, but about as well as someone who has really good physical tools. And I think, like you mentioned, he does it when he spins off the gather, so it catches the defense off guard. And the tightness, the explosiveness for someone with his athletic tools or lack of above average to elite athletic tools is crazy. I will say that because he is a bit on the smaller side, not too bursty, strong wing, length, physical tools, basically, you know what I'm talking about. He is at a disadvantage in terms of his finishing at the rim. Like I find it hard to believe that he'll be anything better than average, but for someone of his size, if he can just capitalize off his shot making, his passing, his pace, his handle, all that kind of stuff, he's able to find those open creases, and he's gotten a lot better, specifically last season to this past season, or the 2019-2020 season to 2020-21. at accepting contact, that kind of stuff. So I think, especially with a couple year or two of NBA development, he could turn into a passable finisher to kind of mesh with his shot making. I think that's a really good balance with Maxey, who's more of a downhill player, and then hopefully the idea is that he can use the shooting as like a counter to that if the defense cuts it off, and then Butler's kind of the opposite in that end. So I think that could be a really good balance if they do end up playing together.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned the finishing. So he did finish 63.7% at the rim this past season, according to Bartorovic, on 102 attempts, which is like not like outlier great numbers, but it's fine. That's not bad. He only had 5 dunks about. So like you said, this is one thing I noticed with Chris Duarte too, out of Oregon, where I feel like him and Butler both, when they go up to finish, more often than most guards, they keep both hands on the ball, which to me it's like, and then they're like powering up into someone as they try and finish, which to me shows them like, it's again a thing like, I know I don't have the burst to get around this guy or get around his arms at the rim. I am pretty strong though, which I mean, you guys probably agree, Jared Butler is a pretty strong for a 6'3 guard in a basketball court. He like will power into guys' arms, think I can absorb this contact and get the position I need. And I think he has craft from there, which is like, it's good that he's aware of that. It's like better to know I need to do this in order to make things work. However, like it does also show like, you know, those Tyrese Maxey finishes where Maxey like shifts the ball between hands like 3 different times midair and is like soaring 10 feet horizontally. Like that's not going to happen with Jared Butler.
Mm-hmm. And Jaden Springer is also one of those guys, those strong guard 2-hand finishers they have. And Dan, just before we go to defense, I'm pretty sure it was you who tweeted it. Butler uses his offhand on drives to like karate chop away so well. And it's so tiny, but it's
another thing Duarte does really well. I focused on it with Chris Duarte a lot in his video did him, but Jared Butler does it too, where it's just like, basically if he, like I said, he puts you in jail, which again, he's very good at because he understands that it maintains advantages. Like if you like try and reach around, he'll like slap your arm down. Like he just like, it's not even that powerful, but he just like knows that you're there. And he's very aware of, I'm just not going to let this dude get anything. But just something you can see, like if you watch any college guards who by the time the upperclassmen were really good, like, I mean, they're just going to be really mean to younger guards. They just, you know, all those little tricks, all those little physical things, like I know that this player cannot do X against me and he doesn't understand that yet. So it's just gonna be a rough game for him. But I go back to the fit with the Sixers. And specifically, I think offensively, there's really not much to complain about. I think we've outlined like, cause he's so versatile in terms of being on ball and off ball, being able to do both of those that you can just slot him anywhere. And I think we said again with him, like hitting those threes off of movement, being able to relocate, like 71% of his threes this last year were assisted and he hit a decent amount of them. And they also like ran him off some, I don't know if it was flop. It kind of looked like floppy action, but like he'll have a ton where he sprays to the corner off some screens, similar to what Danny Green did for the Sixers this past year. You can slot him into that kind of role, at least offensively. And like we said, obviously can be trusted to run pick and roll and stuff, but defensively is probably the more questionable fit because just like we said, the size is a problem. And the Sixers, have a ton of guys who are huge. They have a ton of guys who are relative to the NBA kind of tiny. They don't have a lot of in between. There's just not a lot of guys. It's why a guy I've written about and podcasts about, Kessler Edwards, is always one of my favorite fits just because of the size and movement skills and how you can plug and play him on defense kind of like that. Kevin, do you want to start first on his defense and then we'll go to you, Anish? Like just overall, before we talk about the fit, just evaluating him as a defensive prospect and what he brings.
So what I've learned the last 2-3 years is that Baylor and Texas Tech, it's a little bit, Texas Tech more so, but it's a little tougher to evaluate singular defense because they run a no middle defense as a team. It's a little bit more formulaic, and Baylor, the championship team, executed it like beyond perfection. Everyone knew where to be, when to be, when to rotate. And it kind of not tricks you because it is very, very good defense, but it kind of leads to an overestimation of how good defenders are. We've seen it in Zaire Smith a little bit, but not a ton. Jared Culliver too, where it just didn't translate as much as it should have. And Butler, I feel like, was helped a lot by that. I don't think he's necessarily like a downfall defender. He's probably going to be neutral I guess just hover around neutral. The size and quickness is an issue. The strength is very good though, of just, he's going to be able to kind of body or bully with guys. His upper body strong. I don't know as much about his core. I didn't see a lot of post defense again, because Baylor just kind of knew when to rotate, when to kind of squash advantages that an offense thought they had. But overall, I'd say he's a fine defender. He has good length. I don't think he can be an elite point of attack defender really, but he can stay with guys on a second unit, I think, pretty well.
Yeah. I mean, like it's weird because you'd think, oh, we're talking about the strong guard, maybe he has some post-up reps inside, not a ton of those. Maybe he's a point of attack defender. Like if you're playing with that Baylor team, Davion Mitchell is taking all of the point of attack defense.
Yeah,
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with The Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Anish, how about you? What do you think overall on Butler defensively?
Yeah, before we get to that, I have a real quick question. When you're talking about him in terms of his strength, I'm assuming you're talking about for like a small guard and not like Jalen Brunson level strong, but like
Jared Butler's not like, if I saw Jared Butler getting posted up, it's like by like an NBA level forward. I think it's not good, but it's not like sound the alarms. This is a bucket bad. Like we saw, me and Kevin again, like when that 2018 Celtics series, like whenever JJ Redick got posted up, like it was just done. We knew exactly what was going to happen. Like there's literally nothing, there's no other outcome here besides a bucket. Like I think Jared Butler is, if you had to ask about 6'3", 6'4" guards in basketball, Jared Butler is above average in strength. Jalen Brunson is like different, where it's like, oh, that's a very strong dude, but Jared Butler's like above average in strength.
Jalen Brunson, Lou Dort, off the top of my head, are just like insane core strength guys who can just absorb everything. Like also, Butler's a little more top heavy.
Obviously older, but like, I mean, the famous example, Kyle Lowry's 6 feet tall. I'm like, I don't think anyone can post him up at all.
Harden too. Another, he's a little bit taller, but yeah. Harden too is just a, yeah. Looks like that he's no absorb. But yeah.
No, okay, I agree. I think he'll struggle against, like, for example, like Jamal Murray, Malcolm Brogdon, those kind of guys defending on ball. But I think against, like, I don't think, like, and then I think he can hold his own on switches for, like, brief periods of time. And eventually the hope is that you can kind of provide him some back help, or you can scram switch or something like that. But I think in most cases, like, he's not going to get bullied by, like, I don't know, X average level starting point guard in the NBA in terms of. I just wanted to double check. I think we agree there. So defense, I will agree with Kevin that I think he's going to be hovering around neutral, whether that be below average to above below neutral to slightly above neutral. That kind of depends on the kind of his scheme and who he's playing with, and then also what kind of improvements he can make in terms of basically strength. And you know, there's always areas for college players to shore up in terms of technique and positioning and all that kind of stuff. But in general, I will say he's pretty competitive against opposing guards with a point of attack. He definitely won't make things easy. He's kind of reading off my scouting report here, so apologize if it kind of goes too long. He's an excellent lateral mover, and he has the really good ability to flip hips and change direction, everything like that. He has good technique in terms of at the point of attack, and he has a lower center of gravity. We talked about spin move, but that also helps him allow him to stay with the matchup. And he has the hip flexibility to navigate screens well. And there were even a couple instances where he was quick enough to go under and recover back out to the ball handler for the contest, which I was impressed by. Like you said, I don't love him in switch scenarios. Like it's probably not a good idea, but he's not the worst out there in terms of 6'3" guards.
Mm-hmm. No,
and do you want me to go into, do you go into off-ball now, or?
Well, I think I'll just touch on that. And of course, Anish, keep reading off your, you're the scout here. You feel free to read off your scouting report. We already touched on the strength, definitely. But I think that what you made about the point you made about change of direction and like how he can flip his hips is really good, because that's one of those skills that translates both offensively and defensively, just like a body skill where especially against these other college guards, obviously he'll be playing better players in the NBA, but he just like so many of these guys have to stop and start, or they almost put their head down. It looks like a looping motion as they're trying to drive around people. Butler, both offensively and defensively, he just changes directions without any trouble. Like he can just immediately turn which way he needs to go. It is not going to take any time. And that's just such a huge advantage to have over other players. I would say one of my bigger concerns, I think off ball, like, I don't think he's terrible. I thought he shoots passing lanes well sometimes, but I noticed a few times just like, it's hard to say because this, I feel like I see this in almost every college guard I watch. Like, he gets like caught looking at the ball too much sometimes, and just his man will, shake down to one corner or just lift up from somewhere. And he just like loses track of them for a sec, which, you just can't happen usually, especially in high leverage basketball. Like, you lose track of a guy who can shoot, like that's a three in your face, and you're going to get subbed out for that by some coaches. So that's something I thought, like, it's not something I'm sure it's something that can be shored up, but he is not like locked in all the time off ball, at least in my viewing. I don't know if you have any thoughts on that, Anish.
I think that's the case, but I don't really put too much on that, because, I mean, in my opinion, there's like, especially for college guys, and it even happens to the NBA, like people are going to do that. They're going to have lapses for whatever reason. But I think for the most part, he's fine, at least personally. And just real quick, I just wanted to go back. Like, I know I was mostly praising him in terms of his on-ball defense. I think he's a good guard defender, but just because of the size, that kind of bumps him down to neutral, just to give a quick conclusion that I forgot to say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I just think we're saying all these things about stuff he can do well on defense, but at the end of the day, he is around 6'3", 6'4". And I mean, I don't think he has to look any farther than something like watching this finals, where you realize like Chris Paul's about as good of a 6-foot defender as you'll ever find, especially obviously he's older now, but you watch game 5, like the Bucks went after him just because the Bucks are taller than the Suns at almost every position. And it doesn't matter what he does too much. If Drew Holiday's 6'5 and Chris Middleton's 6'8, they can score over him. And obviously those are this is the Bucks. They're one win away from the NBA title as we record this on the eve of so it's like 9 hours till game 6 starts now, about. We'll just say that. But so it's obviously like a high leverage situation, but it's just hard to get away with so many small guys at the NBA level where you just like, I feel like there's almost a requisite height threshold. It's really good to hit for your team. It's why I think the Bucks have been doing so well these last few games, just that basically as long as they don't play Jeff Teague, like the top 7 of their rotation is all like 6'4 and up. And even that more, it's just, you don't even have to pound teams in style time. It's just hard to get away with that much of a height disparity at every position when you're basically covered. Your guys can't be picked on. And then you can pick on a few height mismatches on the other ways, whether that's in certain actions, like what it can be a post up, it can be offensive rebound. It can just be getting to that baseline for a comfortable jump shot from a good player. And the Sixers, if they take a guy like Jared Butler, he's obviously not a huge liability, but you combine him with, say, like, what does a Seth Curry, Jared Butler lineup look like in the playoffs? Like, I think it gets attacked defensively pretty bad. I don't know, Kevin, how would you think about that too?
I think so, yeah. But I think one of the benefits of picking 28th is that you're going to get a guy who's good already and probably won't crack heavy playoff rotation minutes. So you could kind of make up for minutes wise, just hiding him, I guess. Whereas Jared Butler's backcourt counterpart, Davion Mitchell, who is shorter and I'd say a little less strong, is going to go in the lottery now, which, I absolutely adore Davion Mitchell, but he's not going to be able to, he's going to get thrust into a much bigger role than Jared Butler right off the bat. And maybe not for a playoff team, but it's going to be a little more difficult for Davion to kind of like make ends meet on a switch with a 6'8 guy, a 6'8 NBA player rather than a point of attack college guard. So I think Butler can be hidden a little more if he's selected by the Sixers. So I don't think it's as big of a like catastrophe
as a like a smart team will attack him, but it's not going to be like Chris Paul, where you're playing Chris Paul like 45 minutes in a game, especially in an elimination game. Now you don't need to play Jared Butler that much. So if it goes south, you can just sub him out.
Mm-hmm. Anish,
Jared Butler is Chris Paul.
Exactly. Yeah. Anish, you want to touch on just that defensive, like my defensive concern, just the lack of size.
Yeah, I think with Butler, I would guess like best case scenario, he's going to be what, 9th, 10th man on the rotation.
It's hard to say.
Year one.
It's not hard to say because if Doc Rivers is takes a while to trust rookies, so no matter what, like Jared Butler could be a stud right away, and it'll still take him a while before he gets into it too much. I tend to like think that some guys can like bump themselves up a little bit, and obviously basically by the end of the playoffs, Tyrese Maxey was probably the 6th or 7th guy on the team, maybe higher even. Like, so he can definitely leverage himself up to that. Now, I think Tyrese Maxey is probably a little bit better than Jared Butler overall, just because the athletic difference. Whereas, like some say Jared Butler's a horrible athlete, but like Tyrese Maxey, you watch him jump, you just watch how fast he is in the open court. He's like a special kind of athlete in that sense. And that is not Jared Butler. But I think that's a good point. But then like the question is asked, like, obviously you're not thinking of the 28th pick, you're going to solve all the problems of a want to be contender in the Sixers. So that's a lot to ask of him, but then you ask like, is he the right pick then if you're thinking, oh, we don't have to worry about that because he probably won't be too heavily focused in the rotation, if you get what I mean.
Yeah. I think if he's the best, so if for the Sixers, so for example, I think I have him 21st on my board. I could be wrong, but so let's say he's available at 28. He's the highest player there. I'm pretty confident taking him. And I understand there are concerns with the, like you mentioned, like having him, Seth, and then even though Maxey is a good defender, in my opinion, projects out to be a good defender for his position, that playing those three small guards is a little tough. I think the offensive fluidity that, and like the, at least the confidence that I have that he can be a good NBA player in terms of offense, both on and off the ball, I think you're like, all right, we'll work with the defense later. And I'm assuming, and again, I don't have any sources or anything. You guys are most likely more plugged in with what the team is going to do and everything, at least more than me. I'm assuming the roster will be better constructed next year, so that it'll be a little bit more balanced.
Was that a Ben Simmons comment, Anish?
I plead the 5th.
No, yeah, like, and obviously it's probably why some Sixers fans aren't super into this year's draft, because they're just thinking like, this team has a big problem and it's probably not solved by the 28th pick. I don't personally have like a big board, but I do like, I'd say of the 10 to 15 guys, I've watched enough games, full games on to kind of feel like pretty confident how to view them. Jared Butler's definitely one of my favorites in terms of fits with the Sixers, just because like you said, offensively, the way they died against Atlanta, he can help with some of that in terms of just being versatile, being able to help both in terms of spacing off the ball, provide them movement shooting, but also if you need him to run something, he is capable of that. But just the overall lack of defensive size limits me. It's why I probably still my absolute favorite pick at 28 is Kessler Edwards, just because I think basically he immediately helps them in terms of having a wing size player who's probably even a little bit taller than a wing size player who offers some really valuable movement shooting skills that they can basically just, I think Kessler Edwards is probably of the guys available at their spot can help them both on offense and defense in some way earlier than any other prospect that will be there at that spot, if that makes sense. I don't know if you guys have any thoughts on that.
I need to watch a little more Kessler because you're hyping him up a ton and I didn't get to watch a ton of him. So I'm going to make it my homework today to watch a little more and I'll tweet at you.
Anish, how about you?
A quick plug. I did a Let's Watch film with PD on Kessler. And I think defensively he's perfect for the Sixers because he, you know, gives them a good wing size player who is very, very good off the ball. And then I think eventually will become good on the ball with some biomechanical tweaks and all that kind of stuff. Offensively, I think if you keep Ben, he doesn't make much sense. But if you don't have Ben and you have a little bit more of a dynamic guard creator, like I'm just throwing out an example, Zach Levine, Malcolm Brogdon, just names have been popped up. I think he works a little bit better off the ball. But if you need more on ball juice, then it doesn't make much sense. But assuming Simmons gets traded, which at least is what it seems like, I do like Kessler for the Sixers in that scenario because the need for on ball creation lessens a bit.
Yeah, so much of all the Sixers draft fits are like based on, well, is Ben Simmons still on the team? Who have you replaced him with? Have you have traded him? Heck, it might not even matter because there's a chance Ben Simmons is packaged with this 28th overall pick I've talked so much about in a potential trade. So it's all kind of weird. I'll be happy if they take Jared Butler over Kessler Edwards even just because, I mean, I still think, like, I overall think he's going to be a good player and I've loved watching him play. Just that Baylor team is really fun when they have it all going, the advantage creation, how smooth everything flows. It sounds cheesy, but there's a lot of passion throughout that team. Like, visibly looked like they enjoyed playing basketball and enjoyed being with each other. You mentioned, I forgot to touch on this earlier. You mentioned like the post seals that Thamba and Chama Chachua will do. Like, they're also great at, and the Sixers never do this, I feel like, but they're great at those little Daniel Tice screens where you like fake a post up just to clear someone out. Like, they will always, whenever they saw Jared or Davion driving, like, they're just clearing their dude out. They have no intention of getting the ball. And it's pretty great. I've posted a few times about Macy Oteague. Like, I mean, dude is weird to watch play sometimes because of that shot. And then he basically throws in four bank shots a game that shouldn't go in, but do. But yeah, I just like, if we're going for all out vibes, I think Jared Butler's a great pick. Like, would you say the same, Kev?
I'd say so, yeah. And the Sixers don't run those little seals or like snakes.
No, they do not.
Because Dwight Howard would probably just murder someone if he tried to do it. Oh, and Joel would get called for fouls just because he's enormous. Yeah, they don't really have a player that has that kind of like Tice body control and like hidden fouls in them. But yeah, there's so many times watching that Butler team or Baylor team that he just got like wide open layups. Like, how the heck did that happen? And it was just because their big men were so good at that. Because like Teague, like you mentioned, the Bucks just being bigger than everyone, basically, or bigger than who they were attacking on the Suns. Baylor ran 3-6-4 guards, or
Davion's like 6 foot flat, right?
Yeah, so 6'4". I think Macy was 6'3", 6'4", and then a 6 foot guard, and then two big men, basically, and they won the title. So it's a different game in college than it is in the NBA, obviously. But yeah, that Baylor team, you said the passion, just to harp on Baylor real quick, they were just so freaking fun that championship run the whole time.
Anish, what were you gonna say there?
Yeah, I just wanted to say, like, there were even times, like, it wasn't like a crazy amount, but there were definitely times where they'd run like all four small guards, like they run Flagler, Davion, Maceo, and Jared Butler together with most of the time it was Vital or Chama Chachua, but then there was other instances. But yeah, there were even times where they'd run four guards, and obviously I would be very, very surprised if that happened in the NBA.
Yeah, hey, I was saying the Sixers don't have enough wings, but Baylor basically won a title without any, so you know, maybe the Sixers just need to follow Baylor's title plan. Then we're gonna run, so the lineup will be Seth Curry, Tyrese Maxey, Jared Butler. Well, how about we'll throw Danny Green in there just as he counts as a guard even. Yeah, but he's too much like a wing. What's another small guard they could throw out there? Maxey,
Shake.
I mean, he's 6'6", but yeah, we'll say he's a guard. So Shake, Maxey, Seth Curry, Jared Butler, and Joel Embiid. That's got to be like a +5 net rating at least, right?
And then when Joel subs, you just throw Paul Reed in there.
Exactly.
I know it would probably be a bad lineup, but that is a lot of like offensive creation, like secondary creation around Joel Embiid. So it's like you're probably getting torched on defense, but it's like fun offensively. And it's like we've seen in the playoffs how important it is to have guys who can work off your primary creators, and just have like four guards who can dribble pass, shoot around Joel isn't the worst thing in the world. It's most likely a negative, but it definitely is intriguing at least.
The defense will just be like the 2017 Sixers whenever Robert Covington was on the court with Joel Embiid. It's four dudes getting blown by and funnel everything to Joel. He'll take care of it. Trust it.
So this year's Jazz?
that was an unnecessary shot the whole thing. It's still amazing that Joel Embiid's rookie year in those 30 games, like, weren't his minutes still a positive for like an objectively bad team?
Yeah, it was ridiculous. Same story every year.
I think it was actually like, so I was probably like, oh, man, I was just in 10th grade then, I want to say, listening to the Low Post once, where I think it was Zach Lowe and Jeff Van Gundy were talking about like their all-star teams, and I think they were saying Jeff Van Gundy said like he doesn't want to put anyone on the all-star team who's on a team with a losing record. Zach Lowe then immediately ran off Joel Embiid's plus in all his minutes, and he changed his mind saying there's no way that should be possible. I mean, Joel Embiid forever will just like, the Sixers can lose by 20 and he'll finish as a +5 every night. It makes no sense.
It's getting not cool anymore, because I'm like, this can't keep happening. There's no way that this team is this poorly constructed.
Can't keep getting away with this.
It's happening. But yeah, Jared Butler will fix that right away.
Jared Butler will clearly solve all these problems. And Anish, Kev, thank you so much for talking to me today about Jared Butler. Just a really, like, again, we said it a lot, but just a fun prospect overall. One who I doubt he's going to be there at 28, just because I think, especially with him, his condition being cleared, there are going to be a lot of teams who, I'm not saying we're necessarily like the scouts and executives on the NBA teams, will like us see the value of his offense, see what he can bring, see how much fun he is, and kind of look at him. But definitely a cool guy to think about if he is there available for the Sixers. Anish, I'll let you go here first. Plug what you got to plug, any, all good stuff like that.
Yeah, first of all, appreciate you having me on, Dan. Be sure to check out everything he does at the multitude of places that he does them, whether it be Twitter, Inside NU, or is it Inside Northwestern?
Inside NU.
Inside NU, and of course, Liberty Ballers. You can follow me on Twitter at Anish Namburi, and go check out what we're doing at Pro Insight. We have a bunch of stuff in terms of event recaps. We're deep into the live period for high school, college recruiting. And so, yeah, we've been busy with that. We've been at a couple 3SSB events, that's Adidas. And so we have a bunch of content from that. And then also check out my series on team building, roster construction, and data science called The Blueprint. We are not releasing them right now because of how busy we are. We're taking a little break on that, but the next one, which are on the different types of bigs, will be up shortly. But yeah, again, want to say thank you to Dan, and great talking to you and Kevin.
Yeah, just real quick, Anish, like, as working for a draft scouting service like Pro Insight, how busy are you guys in like this week leading up to the draft?
Oh, extremely. yeah, basically, it's been crazy this whole spring summer period. Like, I've been to, I don't think any of you guys are really know Texas like that, but I was at a place called Drive Nation probably eight times within like a 2 month span. And I saw Drive Nation more than I saw my family over the past year. So yeah, it's extremely busy, and I'm not even the most busy guy there. So yeah, it's been crazy.
We'll definitely check Anish out and check out Pro Insight. Like you said, they do a lot of great stuff there. I always love to check it out. And Kev, what do you got to plug, man?
Well, I have to follow up Anish with his incredible list of things. Basically, just do everything. Look at everything Anish just told you to, because I'm unemployed. Visit me at City Winery in Philadelphia whenever I'm working. And check out Liberty Ballers. And check out everything Dan does. Thanks for having me on, Dan. It was a blast, even though it was arranged last night while I was intoxicated. I was like, I'll talk about Jared Butler anytime. Yeah, thanks for having me on, man.
Yeah, follow him at TheKevinRice on Twitter if you're not already. If you're a Sixers fan, I doubt you aren't following him already. But thank you guys so much for hopping on. This is a great time. Jared Butler's a fun guy. It was awesome to talk about him. And I will talk to you guys all next time.